So anyway, I'm Raj Samtani. I've been in this business for a long time in content protection, DRM, watermarking, anti-piracy services, and been working now with the consulting to the Digital Watermarking Alliance for a while. And Graham asked me to moderate this panel. And so what we want to talk about today is, you know, we've heard a lot about forensic watermarking being a tool that is being used to deter piracy in the last few years. It's become a much more viable and popular technology. So what we've seen now is that what we want to discuss going forward is how do you actually make this stuff work? And you can go through all the pilots and determine how well the watermark actually works and how robust it is, how imperceptible it is. But the rubber really meets the road in terms of how do you actually make the monitoring system that is doing the monitoring work with the detection technology to actually find the infringements and prove that they are in fact, you know, being infringed by a pirate, and then do something to take action against it so that the piracy can actually be deterred. And one of the things that has happened in the last few years is that the impact of live piracy on things like sports is just really, really, really taking a toll on the actual economics of the business. This morning, Jonathan Taplin talked about that, you know, 10 years ago he made a prediction that ESPN would lose 10 million subscribers, and he was wrong by 3 million. So that's a lot of money coming out of Disney's coffers. Okay, that's, you know, $65 million a year. I mean, a month. That's a decent chunk of change. And so to enable the deterrence of this type of piracy, we've heard a lot about how today it happens where systems are using monitoring technologies to crawl the web and find where the piracy is occurring, and then you send out a takedown notice. But in a live sporting event, if you've got a football game going on for, you know, 2 hours, by the time you send the takedown notice, the game's already over and the money's already lost. So we need to have collaboration, coordination, consistency, and cooperative policies between the various parts of the value chain. And that's really what we're here to talk about today, is that how does this collaboration between the detection technology to actually use the watermark for what it was designed for. You embed a watermark to be able to find the darn thing because you want to deter piracy. And in order to do that, there are some incentives in the marketplace that, in my view, are still to this date misaligned, because the monitoring systems that need to go find the actual infringement don't necessarily today work in concert with the detection technologies. And that's what we are here to sort of talk about, how this is actually going to work in a practical sense. So this is what we've got this panel of experts from vendors in the watermarking ecosystem to talk about. So I'm going to ask them very quickly to introduce themselves briefly, and then I'm going to do a two-slide presentation that describes the workflow of how this detection and monitoring need to work together, and then we'll come back and ask the panelists some questions. So I'm going to start with you, Niels.
Yeah, thanks, Raj. Cheers, everybody.
That's right.
So I'm Niels Forbes, VP Advanced Technology with Bray Matrix. So for 12 years, we've been combining the CA and digital watermarking together as one company, me being engaged in the watermarking effort. And our CA spans 950 operators, I think, with 200 million devices.
Hi, my name is Michael Gamble, Products and Account Manager for Media Science International. Media Science, with our Studio CDN and Web Capio products, specialize in end-to-end 360-degree anti-piracy and business intelligence solutions, supporting today's leading global content creators and some of the world's most prominent brands.
Eric?
Hi, I'm Eric Ventia from Contentarmo. We are an independent company specializing in forensic watermarking both for audio and video.
So great. So that we can quickly go. Whoop, did I do something? Yeah. All right. So that's these three gentlemen that just introduced themselves. And now I want to talk to you briefly about how this actually works in practical terms. So what happens today in the case of this live broadcast that we were describing is that the actual entity that's a distributor, the MVPD for that broadcast event, is you know, captures the sporting event that's taking place, or the live event, and it's broadcast in real time to these set-top boxes. And that set-top box then is, you know, decodes the message, just like in the earlier session we were talking about, and figures out whether the DRM, you know, the keys to actually deliver it, and the television set displays it. What happens, though, is that at the set-top box, oftentimes, there's some capture device that's present, and the stream is captured, put up on some illicit website, and there are people that are getting that content on their remote devices, whether that's a Kodi box or whether that's a Android cell phone being, you know, displayed on with a set-top box. I just spent 6 weeks in India not too long ago, and one of the things that I realized is that people aren't buying Kodi boxes anymore. They're just using an old Android phone with Chromecast. And that is what is being used as a set-top box in their little, as a Kodi set-top box in their living room. And they're downloading or watching both live as well as streaming content right from their cell phone. The Kodi application is just an app that's downloaded onto this phone, and they're able to do this. So the key there is that you don't have enough time, as I was saying earlier, to do something about sending a notice during that live broadcast. So what ends up happening is that the live broadcast is happening, and if you've got this set up in the right way with a monitoring company that's doing the monitoring in real time, finds the offending stream, downloads a snippet of it, and then sends it back to a detector. That detector then determines that it was set-top box with this MAC ID that was the offending set-top box, and you can send a signal back to the conditional access provider to actually cut that guy's signal off. So what you're doing is, rather than sending a notice, you're actually impeding the supply of that to that offending website. And really, this is the type of thing that we would like to be able to get to. So the monitoring company is doing the monitoring, and it has to be done while the game is still going on or the live event is still going on, to be able to say, you know what, we have suspended your account, Mr. Offending Subscriber, and these other people, those millions of people that were watching that illicit stream, can't watch it anymore because it got cut off. Now, does that mean that we're going to stop this completely? No. But what you're trying to do is make the behavior, change the behavior and put enough impediments in it so that it becomes harder and harder to do. And it's going to require legal help too from the legal departments. But really, this is the type of workflow that we are talking about. And what I want to engage the panelists today is to tell us sort of how they're seeing this type of workflow actually being implemented in the types of companies that they're involved with. So we're going to start with Michael. If I can just ask you to kind of talk about how this workflow is being implemented today, to start with, in the music industry, and how you've addressed it, a similar workflow for MSI have done in the music industry.
Sure. So the workflow in the music industry is actually a proven workflow in the sense that it's all but extinguished pre-release leaks. Focusing on that workflow, it's basically you're embedding the forensic watermark in the name of the recipient of the file. If the file is leaked online, you have your continuous monitoring that's constantly looking for that file or looking for watermarks in a file. So if it seems to find a similar match, it will download it and it will actually run the detector. The key to this, though, is the speed at which it's done. So you want to make sure that you find the file as soon as it hits the net. So the key to pre-release music was crawling before the release, before even the pre-release hit the system. So if you can tie in your watermarking system, into your crawling system, so it feeds all the data going from that was leaving the watermarking system, starts looking for those files, finds it, starts sending notices, as well as alerting the rights holder of who actually leaked the file. I mean, the key was, the caveat there is recipients knowing that there's a watermark and acknowledging that there's a watermark upon access of any of the files is a very strong deterrent as well, because they know that if it's found, they're in trouble.
Now, does your company have a monitoring system also? I mean,
yeah.
Is it running concurrently?
Yeah. So currently, we have our web Capio system. It's a cool system. It's basically constantly looking for any number of files that is put in the system. When it does find matches, it uses different types of technologies, whether watermark detection, image matching, and other types of fingerprinting technologies to verify the content. So even if it doesn't have a watermark, it doesn't mean that you can't effectively action it.
Okay.
How do you know the MAC address? How do you know where a piece of content came from?
Because the forensic watermark is actually embedding in the case of the conditional access type of pay TV system that we were discussing in this workflow, the forensic watermark is being applied at the set-top box. Okay, so what you're trying to do in that case is to deter this guy from using some stream capture tool to take the stream out from that encrypted video that came out of his out. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, but potentially that would not prevent the kind of restreaming efforts, right? Somebody would be. Are we only discussing just screen capturing, or also?
Well, he's capturing the stream and putting it up on a website.
Okay, so just capturing, not actually going behind the scenes and redirecting the stream somewhere.
Even if he were to redirect the stream, he's getting it from that set-top box. Niels, can you address that?
Yeah, and that's a good point. You know, the watermarking itself doesn't prevent anything. I mean, it lives in the video, and it doesn't necessarily have a MAC address, but some ID that goes back to that user. Now, that's just information that travels with the content. And so far, and like we've heard before, it's more of a forensic application, meaning later on you read that information and you figure out, okay, what happened? And then you go back and maybe you close that distribution, you improve that system, or you go with legal action after that user. Now, what we are talking about, if this can be compressed and the whole chain can be executed while it's still going on, then you can leverage this, you know, forensic watermarking to actually apply action, to actually know where it came from and shut that content off during the event, during the live broadcast, which is not possible with this video because you process this, I mean, VOD, you process the whole content and then you have your file and send it out later, you know what happened, but the leak has been done, as you know, it's out there. Here, knowing where it come from and shutting down the source is really allows you to take action. How long a process for the entire workflow is that?
To shut down the live event.
Yeah. So this is really composed of different features. So we are targeting 15 minutes, but this is composed of the effort to capture the stream, to read out the content, and then to send it back to identify it. And here's not necessarily takedown notice involved, but you can go back to the CA and then revoke the rights. And how quickly you can revoke the rights also depends on the delivery system and the key period that you grant access for that content to.
So on average, are you talking 15 minutes or 2
yes,
hours?
Yes, 15 minutes at the time.
Yeah, these days the watermarking systems are getting better and better, where you only need a few minutes of video to actually verify that you can actually find the entire watermark. So then it becomes a policy question as to how quickly you can get that detector, put it up on the cloud, get whatever the legal cover you need to send the instruction back to the CA company to be able to say, yes, I have enough, you know, irrefutable proof that this guy is the offending guy, and shut him down. And we'll deal with the consequences later. But the point is that these are policy questions that need to be resolved. I think what we wanted to achieve in this panel is to basically talk about the fact that with today's technologies and how robust the actual watermark, the embedders are, and the embedding technologies are, that you can actually achieve this. And there are some trials going on in Europe and other places that we know of. So, Eric, yeah, maybe you can chat a little bit about how this is working in the broadcast.
I just wanted, if you really want to confront with live, such as soccer game or football game in the US, you cannot live with 2 hours, because 2 hours, I mean, the game is over, so you are already targeting 15 minutes or even less. And we keep on working on improving those figures. And that's really now a few minutes content, and then we need to do the full stuff. But I can say that it's not only trials today, these days, it's already in production in a number of countries. And if you look at the most famous sports in the world, the ones that are the most pirated, such as soccer league in the UK, these guys are really considering mandating watermarking and all this kind of workflows for their licensee to get their content. Because Raj was discussing the alignment of the stakeholders, and for this kind of events you have very good alignment between the sport owners and their distributors, because they all lose money when all the customers are going to the illicit office.
That's
so they're considering that, or you're saying they've decided to do that?
I can tell you they are running projects with that kind of workflows. What I'm saying is that some major sports owners are considering mandating for their whole licenses, mandating watermarking technologies for the next, let's say, RFQ, for the next round of licensing content.
Yeah, the point is they're doing it for the lower hanging fruit where they've got tight relationships, and I think what Eric's pointing out is that some of these workflows coupled with the policies and the collaborative, you know, how the messages are going to go back and forth between the various entities, that is starting to happen.
Let me say that's a start. You know, that's sort of the next frontier and a challenge to compress the overall workflow, to be able to shut down the device, to allow the mark to be robust and to be quickly extracted. But we do see more and more demand for that, and that goes with broadband, because broadband is a two-way door. Now people also easily have the ability to upload the content. And there's a casual pirate that just puts out the cell phone and shows the TV, and that goes with sport, with UFC on Periscope or other sources. People just want to share. They're not necessarily running a big operation. But there are others that do run an operation, and they also have the ability to fairly easily propagate that.
But I think the key here what we're trying to acknowledge is that sending takedown notices in this kind of an environment is just playing, it's worse than playing a game of whack-a-mole, because and not to say that these guys are also not smart. Some of the pirates that are doing this type of online stuff are actually smart. They do have multiple boxes that they can, you know, jump from one to the other. But I think at least if you can stop and if you can see these 404s happen in you know, enough cases, you're placing impediments in that behavior. The problem I see is that the behavior, we've allowed the behavior to perpetuate with the casual users, that it's just so accessible. It's so accessible. They've got the aggregated, you know, ability to watch whatever they feel like watching. They've been trained with those videos that Mark's presentation talked about as to how to actually do this. And so what has happened is that the casual user, their behavior is what has been modified over the course of the years with the easy access to pirated content. And if we go back and we see that MTM data that Mark presented earlier, that if you look at the pay TV industry and see their main challenges, where, you know, these 50% of the executives acknowledge that piracy is one of the main challenges that they face, I think what you're going to see is that these technologies like watermarking are going to be used in a much more practical way than they're being used today. But Niels, in terms of some of the things that are going on in the industry to enable this sort of thing, are there some standards activities that you think that might be able to benefit this whole process?
Yeah. So as watermarking matures, also we are getting together as companies and we create more on information on how the workflow is more standardized and how it's easier to do. And we have created this Ultra HD forum. We have created a document that sort of gives an outline on the workflow and more on the technical level, and we're working with the Streaming Video Alliance on a document to be released beginning of next year, and that outlines more on the different actors and the benefits of watermarking and the general applications to make this happen and the reasons to do that, and then what do you do with watermark as you find it.
Eric, any you guys are also participating in these?
Participated with Niels on, especially in the Ultra HD forum guidelines on, let's say, kind of white paper explaining to people what we can do and how to use it. And indeed, the next step would be to go in more implementation level, and say operational level for customers to be aware of what can be done.
Michael, do you have anything to add on that? I mean, this whole effort to standardize some of these processes and to enable the coordination and collaboration that's going to be necessary?
Sure. I mean, one thing that would be great, just as since not all watermarking is equal, meaning that there's multiple different technologies, there's audio watermarking, there's video watermarking, there's different types of video watermarking technologies, different types of audio watermarking technologies. One thing that might be good is a standardization of, you know, maybe a standard identifier, so who the watermark provider is. So a watermark basically on top of a watermark to say, hey, this is a watermark provided by Content Armor, MSI. Reason for that is looking for these watermarks, sometimes you're stabbing in the dark a little bit, and sometimes you need, and the other thing is you want to make sure that it comes down quick. So take, for instance, a live broadcast. It makes no sense to sit there and try to decode 16 different companies' watermarks and find one in a live broadcast when you could just decode the heartbeat, which is a standard identifier that says either Content Armor, MSI, or whoever else, or whoever else may be on the whose watermark it may be. So that way, then the system will just direct that content directly to the watermark owner or direct it to the detector that needs to decode it. Automation is key into this too, because the system needs to be automated to be fast. So take, for instance, Raj said that video watermarking technology is getting better and detectors can detect in a couple of minutes. But then let's say you employ audio watermarking on top of that, then you've got even faster detection window. So, and you're double protected.
Go ahead, you had a question in the back there?
Well, audio definitely has its own advantages. Identifying which watermark applies to content, kind of allowing people to easier circumvent in certain scenarios.
But who? Yeah, I mean, you could say that, but how would you know who's? I mean, you wouldn't. The end user wouldn't have access to the detector, the person streaming or.
Not from the detection point, but from perspective of circumventing, to apply certain specific deterrents, which each one of the technologies is more susceptible.
Oh, in terms of robustness?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, each company has their own technology. But like, just kind of like what I was touching on, let's say you double market, so you've got your audio and your video. But then the other thing is that the pirate needs to know how to actually deter that that mark. So if as long as you're leaving the detectors offline, it's kind of difficult for them to be able to pull the information.
But by definition, watermark is about trade-offs, right? Watermarking is about trade-offs. So yes, you would have to consider that issue when you're making those
determinations. I think in this particular case, it would be an optional link, not a link in the chain that when it's broken, everything is lost, but an additional link that is helpful if it's there, but not introducing necessarily a new weakness.
Yeah, what we are really saying in this instance is that there are many watermark providers. So if you get a leak and the monitoring company finds a leak, they have no way to know which detector to actually run against that system. So what Michael was describing was a audio identifier that says this particular content came from this broadcaster or this OTT provider or this wherever it came from, and therefore there's a database somewhere else that says use this detector to run against it.
Probably came from a kind of more closed out circuit of kind of studio dream world where they kind of usually know which provider they usually use. So if they receive something, they usually just go to that provider.
But these watermarks are actually put by the distributor, so by the MVPD or the OTT. So it makes it a little bit more complicated, but go ahead.
I think that's a fair comment. There are scenarios where you're looking for a specific content and you know you're the content provider, you know what mark to look
right,
for.
Right. Yeah, but with the live, let's say with a live broadcast, there could be multiple content owners or multiple rights holders that have the rights to broadcast that in different regions, so which opens up another.
Thanks for the questions. I think we just got the hook from Garrett. If there are any other questions, I think we can discuss them over a beer. But I thought this panel is going to take we aren't going to go through that. It's going to be hard to get through the half hour. But I guess having you guys drinking some beer loosened you up. So thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.